Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, May 27th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, and thank you for joining us on the eve of a Memorial Day weekend. Woohoo! The first weekend of summer. Loving that. Loving that. And we do have a very special show for you today, and we'd love to hear from you, so please call in to listen live or ask questions at 347-857-2710. We are here live until 3:45 today. Again, that phone number, those 10 digits are 347-857-2710. So I have a question. Anybody in the mood for a little tennis? Love tennis. Love
bounce
it.
Hit.
Huh?
Love bounce it. Hit.
Well, let's see, my special guest is chiming in already. I love it. Well, my special guest today provides a unique teaching technique he coins practicing life through tennis. He's been a tennis coach for over 30 years. How can that possibly be? He's not even that old. But my guest meets with these clients for sessions intended to improve their tennis game and to address issues that may affect them on and off the court, such as anxiety, phobias, anger, and a whole bag more. So back by popular demand, please welcome Zach Kleiman.
Hello, Lauren.
Hello, Zach. It's so nice to have you back live on the show.
All right, don't make any mistakes.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? I already had criticism as a topic, but mistakes, that's a good one. That's a good one. How do you look at, I guess that would be trying to be perfect.
Yes, which self-criticism is a very popular choice to deal with mistakes.
Oh, how so?
Well, we were talking about the story I wrote about this client, Rhonda, who is a great self-criticizer, and she is a perfectionist. She wants everything to be right, but she doesn't really know what she wants them to be right for. And she discovers through hitting some tennis balls that she judges everything based on what she thinks should happen, and realized that was not her own voice, but her mom's.
Well, we all have that voice. In our head, we have a series of tapes, I like to call them. I have a selection of my own, and they run on automatic when we're in a particular situation. So how do you deal with that voice in your head?
Well, how do you deal with it? And then I'll
ask you first. don't. Ask
don't,
you first. You're on the couch.
Don't do that to me.
These are your shoes, man, okay?
I guess the first thing would be, I will start then. is to recognize that there is a voice and that it's not just you acting. And then questioning, is that voice helping you perform the way you want to perform?
I guess there's another powerful word too, performance.
Yes.
Well, isn't that on the level of perfection? That
performance
doesn't have the same intensity as perfection.
Well, you may have put yourself back on the couch.
Well, it's always about me, isn't it?
I don't know if performance is about perfection. I think performance is self-expression. It's just to perform, to do what you're doing. It doesn't mean it has to be perfect.
No, it doesn't. And I'm inking that in. Yeah. I'm putting it into a little box. You know me. We go way back. You know how I have a series of boxes.
Yes.
And I like to take them out every now and then and get in the box.
So,
but in going back to Rhonda for just a moment, did her initial, was the initial purpose of her coming to you for the little criticism in her head, the little voices?
No, Rhonda wanted her tennis to get better. She was stuck. She had reached some plateau. She was searching for help, and she thought the help was going to be someone helping her hit the ball better. And we quickly saw that she did hit the ball really well. She was certainly an above-average player for the amount of time she had played, and that the intensity and harshness through which she saw life or hit the tennis ball got her to this point, but she had plateaued, and she was getting frustrated. And then she realized that it was going to be something inside her that needed to change, not something outside her.
But isn't that's the beauty of what you do, is that you do help people, quote-unquote, hit the ball better by looking inside oneself.
Yes, they're taking away some of those blocks, like the block of the criticizer inside her, the judger.
So, the judger. So to give listeners who may be new to this unique type of teaching that you do, briefly describe how it all works. We have 38
today.
Minutes left. You're on.
You are
okay,
funny
thank
today,
you.
Lauren.
What's that?
You're funny today, Lauren.
I'm just being comfortable in my own shoes.
So what was your question? Briefly describe.
Well, for you've been on the show a few times, and people love having you on it who are familiar with the type of work that you do, practicing life through tennis. But for those listeners that aren't that familiar with your unique style of teaching, just explain exactly what it is that you do, because you don't necessarily have to know how to play tennis.
No, whether someone wants to learn how to play tennis or not, I'm assuming that tennis exists on this planet. It's been a sport for over 130 years, if not more. And the idea of playing tennis, to me, needs to be unblocked rather than taught. So handing someone a tennis racket, they will naturally place the strings in a way that the ball and those strings meet, so the ball pops off the strings and goes forward. I don't really have to tell them. And I trust that that will be the process at every stage, even from beginner, even as a beginner or as a world-class player, that they know, they already know how to play. And my job is to bring that player out of them.
And by doing so, you sometimes come across blocks, and even some beautiful gems as to who that person is.
Yes.
And perhaps why they have.
And even once in a while, there's the need to go try it this way. If the block is too strong, or I can see the frustration level getting way too high, way too fast, one discuss the frustration level and then go. And then sometimes use a device or a technique to facilitate some speed for change, but that's very, very rare, because it's mostly there. Somebody wanting to learn how to hit a drop shot, they already have the idea of what the drop shot is, and they think they don't know how to hit it, and I assume they do know how to hit it, and they usually do. But the blocks are self-doubt. The blocks are I can't. I was I was always told I'm not a good athlete, or I don't have good eye-hand coordination, or I don't have good hands. And then they realized that the words that they heard, that inner dialogue, or your tapes, are wrong.
Yes, and you brought up an interesting point that I wanted to talk to you about, the inner dialogue, the language. Just as an example you just used, I can't do something.
Yes, I charge a dollar for a can't, over and above my fee.
Over and above, wow, that's a beautiful, well, you know, that's a beautiful thing. You can make a lot of money that way.
Yeah, much more money from the can't than I can from my fee.
Residual income. That's true, but obviously these are again messages, beliefs that we all have heard at one time or another during a moment of trying to accomplish something.
Yes, that the moment of fear, the moment of doubt.
I know, but
what if I do succeed? Oh shit! If I succeed, then oh my God, I'm gonna be better than my friend who I've been playing tennis with for 16 years. If I get better, oh, I can't do that. I can't get better because then I'm going to have to call new people and be vulnerable and change my self-image. That would be horrible.
That would be horrible because all the work you've done and all the clothes and shoes and bags that go with that self-image, it's costly.
Yes. Yes, all the accessories.
Accessories. So what is, when you are dealing with a client and who, whatever their angst is, and they have this aha moment, how does that change, how does it change your life? Well, I guess that's basically what I want to ask. What differences do you see in their behavior, in how they play tennis, because that'll give us an insight into how they deal with the rest of their life.
When they have the aha moment?
When they get it, when they, oh, right, now I understand, when you've broken down, like you did with Rhonda on Soul Pancake, how you kind of broke down the criticism, where was the tape, it was about her mother talking to her and so forth and so on, until she got to...
Well, I wasn't sure if Rhonda wanted to stop it. That was one of my, I guess, my confusions about Rhonda. She did it so well, and she did play well, but did she really want to stop it? And I had to ask her very directly. That would. How does she live with the critic, and does she want to get rid of it? Because she's had business success and tennis success, but clearly no personal success from her story.
Exactly, but I find that interesting that if she's got 2 out of 3, so even if she didn't understand what that critic was about, or even if she didn't want to deal with it or get rid of it, why couldn't
she would call herself very harsh names and call her performance, every minor error would be strongly berated. And she also had great desire to keep excelling, which I sort of liked her. I forget what musical that's from, Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better. And she changed it to Anything I Can Do Better. She kept trying to reaffirm herself constantly and never rested.
That in itself is hard to do. How do you keep topping yourself in a sense?
Well, it stopped because she plateaued. She couldn't get better for quite a while. But her aha moment was when I think she realized that she needed her mother's approval, or thought she needed her mother's approval for her relationships. and she avoided intimacy because of her realization that she judged everything, or knew that her mother would never judge well any guy she picked.
Yeah, it comes down to our parents, doesn't it?
For some people. But it ultimately comes down to us, because we hopefully get a choice.
Right, but I think there's an unawareness of where that comes from. Obviously it does come from us, and it's about hearing that, then wanting to change that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we find the source, I guess, then that's a little easier to come to terms with it, and then try to change it and see the other side.
Yes, to see her, to see her, the clearing, you mean?
The clearing, or just to say, aha, oh, it's my mother. Okay, well, my mother's opinion doesn't matter anymore. I'm an adult, so I choose to believe differently.
Right, that would be nice if it was that simple, but
that's
yes.
What I'm saying. It would be that, okay, it came from my mother because I wanted to please her. I wanted her to love me, and I didn't want to risk losing her love.
Right, and she would please, and every time the critic got satisfied, it almost became more rewarding for her. She almost, once she pleased the critic, it quieted down for a moment, and she felt better. So it was almost like a reward was keep the critic, so you can keep pleasing the critic, and then you'll feel better.
Because the critic will stop.
Right, for a moment, until the critic wants anything I can do better. And then the critic asks for something more. And then she goes, okay, let me please the critic again, because it felt so good for a moment. Instead of saying, wait a second, the critic may not be the end-all of this life, of why I'm here. And if I do want to have a relationship, I'm going to need to learn about what this judgment voice in my head is.
It can get pretty loud in there, in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what, you said something here, because I guess I wanted to know what would you say to Rhonda to stop allowing that critic in her head?
Well, it's not about stopping it. It's just recognizing, does it feed, as the title of the Soul Pancake is the website that I do some of my writing on, and the title of the article in Soul Pancake is, does criticism feed or starve your true self? And so it's not about stopping it. It's recognizing, how much does it help? Is it feeding me, or is it starving me? Or is it overfeeding me? Does my criticizer encourage me to be my true self, or does it starve me of the nutrients to be my true self? If it's starving me, if I am feeding it, I'm probably going to be in trouble at some point. I need more nutrition.
So what does your critic do for you?
My critic tends to remind me to love myself. If my critic gets critical of the way I did a lesson, it reminds me to appreciate what I did get to, even though I wasn't perfect. So not being perfect is a reminder to trust what I did, trust the is, and not what should have.
I guess it's just hearing your perspective that it's nice to have that critic to remind you of the things that you need to be mindful of, and not necessary to listen to the voice.
Right. The literal words that the critic, the inner voice, says may not be the ones I want to listen to. I may want to listen to where it's pointing. if somebody's worried about, I worked with a guy who's worried about money. And I said, well, maybe you're being asked to observe, one, how much money you do have, or how much value you put on what you do. It may not literally be you're poor, you're lacking, you're poor, you're lacking. It's what do I need to do to focus on my value? Just to try, just re-bracketing, as I think some psychologists say, to refocus, to reshape the language, even though you hear it one way, to learn how to reshape it. If I tell myself I overran the ball, I want to go, oh, at least I got there. I can always slow down. Maybe I should recognize how fast I am. Instead of judging or criticizing that I overran it, appreciate my speed. And then I begin to have control, tough word, over my speed.
That is a tough word.
Yes.
The big C.
The big C.
The big C. But I also think that, speaking for myself, if I have that critic in my mind, I listen to the critic and the words it says immediately, instead of saying, okay, I hear what you're saying, but let me look at what actually happened and find the positives out of that experience. Just like you said, it's kind of a flag to say, hey, take a look at this and look at the positive aspects of that particular situation.
Well, or the realistic rather than positive.
The realistic.
I overran the ball. I can go, shit, I overran the ball. Or I can go, oh, look how fast I am. I didn't really see the ball, but I ran fast. And try, you know, positive is as limiting as negative. So it's just, overran it. I was jammed. I was a step and a half closer to the ball than I needed to be. Give me that, you know, next time I get that shot, I'm going to maybe observe the ball a little better and trust my speed. Maybe trust rather than positive.
Well, one would learn a little bit more about your ability on that for that particular instance of that shot, that you have speed. So
yes.
You know that's part of your arsenal, and you could use that if you needed to at another time.
Yes.
Fabulous. So,
what else is on your mind?
I could do How to Be Comfortable in Your Shoes with Zach Kleiman once a week. That could be the show, because I, as you know, I have been graced with your presence on the court, and I just find it so rewarding, and it's amazing how you can learn about yourself. You know, therapy, going to a therapist to discuss any type of issue is wonderful. You get insight into yourself, hopefully, and it's an intellectual approach to an issue you may be experiencing. But once you're on the court and you're on that other side of the net, a whole different paradigm is there.
Yes, I've been discussing that with some psychologists to try and put this on film recently, of how to get the exercises to be filmed for, say, television, so that somebody could watch it, see the lesson, take away an idea, and then go out onto the court or the golf course and use it immediately.
I think that's a great idea.
Well, we're trying to do it with a psychologist on the court involved in the process.
I think that's interesting because we learn in a numerous ways, visually, audibly, kinesthetically, and so through your technique, that's more of a kinesthetic approach. And I know I have a little voice in my head, so, oh, this is where I am. This is a reminder, the little flag. Oh, this seems familiar. This looks familiar. So if I'm behaving this way on the court, then I must be doing that in real life somehow.
So you see the parallel.
Of course, of course. I'm president of your fan club, remember? One of the many presidents. I'm sure you have several. But I think it's fabulous because years of therapy, you say, okay, I get it, and then you're involved in a situation, and then there's that familiar, funny feeling in your gut that reminds you that this is familiar, but you don't know really how to heal it or how to address it. And that
healing or that addressing that may lead to healing also changes at different stages or ages of our life.
Exactly. Whenever you're ready to get whatever information you're ready to get. I think I mentioned the last time we talked privately that I was reading Alice Miller's book, The Drama of the Gifted Child. And I started reading it maybe a year ago and gleaned some information from it. And after rereading the same pages, now I got another aha, completely different. I wasn't ready to hear, or I just didn't even hear or see the message until reading it when I'm in another place in my life. It was fascinating.
So when I'm 15 years old and I'm on the tennis court and I lose to players I think I should beat, my response at 15 might be, I have to hit harder. Same thing might happen in my 40s. And I'm losing to players I think I should beat. And my response might be, I need to see the ball better. In my teens, there's a possibility that that parallel off the court is that I don't really know a lot about my power as a man, boy, in this world. And as a 40-year-old, I might be going, I'm not really seeing my boss, my coworkers, as well as I could, and that's what is stopping me from playing better.
Exactly.
The parallel from what do I take from the court into life, or what problems or obstacles do I see off the court that I can explore on the court? Jim, there's so much miscommunication at work. And everybody says that it's me.
Well, it's that.
And I don't believe them. And then
it's that intent. You know, when you're practice, if you're an actor and you're reading your lines, I walk the dog to the park is the line that should be stated. But there's an intention behind the line. And I think we as people somehow are unaware of that intention behind the line. And by going out and physicalizing it, that line, we can see what we truly mean, that other intention, the subconscious interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not what we think it is. Sometimes we come to you, I'm having an issue with a coworker, and once that story begins to unfold, you begin to realize, well, that's where the situation is right now, but it stems from a lack of self-confidence with a superior who's older, so maybe a father figure or someone else, or another experience you had when you were younger.
So authority figures may be the theme.
So it's not necessarily what you feel is, but only as you peel away the layers can you discover that. And that's why physicalizing an issue, whether it's anger, any kind of phobia, it's that through the movement, I find that you can visually see and experience those layers. Oh, okay, that's one layer. You might not get to, you know, the root of the problem, but you begin to peel away. Now I kind of understand. Or there's more of an awareness than just verbalizing. There's something missing.
I've been working with.
Zach, before you go on, we have a caller. I love it when people call in and want to ask questions. So, because it's so fabulous. So let's allow this caller to.
I hope it's the right number.
I hope it's the right. I don't know. We don't do pole dancing at this hour, so we'll see. Hi, you're on the air with Lauren and Zach.
And I only called for the pole dancing.
Oh, good. Finally.
Hi. Finally. It's a familiar. It's lovely Sharon. Hello, Sharon. I recognize
this is
that voice.
Sharon, and I'm just calling to say that my intention is to someday play as well as Princess Lauren.
Okay. Who is that? Do you want to? What are your thoughts about the inner critic?
It's always there. It's just learning how to love it.
And how have you learned how to love yours?
Every day. It's try again.
What do you do to try to learn to love your critic?
Well, you just learn to accept your shortcomings and consider them, you know, little steps along the way to growing and having fewer shortcomings.
What is the most repetitive thing your inner critic says?
Oh.
You can't. You shouldn't. How could you do that, Sharon?
I would say with me, it would be, don't try so hard.
Hmm.
Yeah, that would be.
Or the critic would be saying, you're trying too hard. Or
right,
try
right.
Does it say try harder? Or you're.
No. I used to wear a T-shirt years ago that said, I'm succeeding as fast as I can. that sort of describes the continuing on in life with the great gusto and vigor, and then all of a sudden you have to take a break and take a deep breath and say, wait a minute, I'm already enough.
Isn't that a wonderful awareness?
Anyway, enjoying the show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you, fam.
All right.
Bye.
Take care.
That may be one of the essences of this work is that I am enough as I am.
Right. Right.
That no matter. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think that's a familiar theme for a lot of people. How to be comfortable in your own shoes is really how to be happy with yourself.
As you are.
Yes, as you are. But sometimes it's not even the critic, but the early training, there's such disbelief that on one level, it's kind of fake it till you make it. You still kind of say, I am enough, as I am, as I am. And your experiences outside of yourself, if they're not giving you the gratification you feel is necessary, then you know that it has nothing to do with what's outside yourself, but what's within. So you got to focus on healing and being happy with who you are, because then the things outside of yourself will look differently and you'll appreciate them more.
But even that takes away from the urge to heal, because if I can accept myself as I am, unhealed or healed, I think the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
I don't have to be healing.
Well, you don't have to be fixed. You don't have to be okay. I'm fixed now. Now I can love myself. You know, you've
because you'll always find something else.
Exactly. You've been wanting to lose those college pounds. for years. And so now you say, well,
Or many times. I know I've lost 30 to 40 pounds many, many, many times.
Right. And you say to yourself, I'm not going to feel better about myself until
I lose it again.
I'll lose it again. It's so interesting. I was just recently speaking to a friend. I just hear when you do self-discovery, you hear the pain in other people also. And, you know, I can't tend to be the fixer, which I've learned is not appropriate to do. But it's for my want. I know. I'm making you laugh today. That's good. That's good.
I just love
Somebody called me the fixer.
But
that's
not,
a whole other show.
I'm laughing about it. It's not appropriate to do.
But you're doing it anyway. Have you no shame, my friend? Well, you know, laughing is
maybe
good.
Maybe it's appropriate to a degree.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, this is me. If I find something that really works and I can heal, well, then so can you. Right? Here's the number. Go do it. But maybe people aren't ready. You know, we're all on our own journey. But, you know, my journey began, I think, when, unfortunately, my mother passed away. And she kind of had the key to my life. And when I got that key, there was a certain sense of freedom. And I look at it as a gift that, unfortunately, she's not here, but by her passing, I got the gift to learn to be me. And I thought, what a wonderful gift that is.
And how she held the key till she died?
Till she died. She probably still has a spare key with her. And I only mean that with love.
Right.
Right. Yes. Yeah, it is. You have to laugh. I mean, I laugh at myself and that because it's funny. It's not funny, ha ha, but it's enlightening to take a look at yourself and see that you really are. We all have the key to unlock our potential to being whomever we are, and that is enough. And it shouldn't be put into a box about who you are, what you do, what you wear, all that kind of thing. But it tends to be sometimes with depending where you live.
And what you think you do want. Because it can change.
Yeah. Wouldn't you want that? You wouldn't want to
keep evolving.
Keep wanting the same thing and not changing. I don't know. I've learned one of the biggest things you've taught me, Zach, is how to let go of results. You know, what happens if you, at the last minute, you were unable to make this
phone call,
this interview? And
what would have happened?
I don't know. I would have. You know, you got to have a kind of a plan B, but I had a loose plan B.
What was it?
Well, I was going to read. I was going to read a story about me. No, a wonderful book that you gave me, Tao Te Ching, the Stephen Mitchell.
Oh yes.
I was going to share maybe one excerpt from that, but the let's say fear of the possibility of you not being on the other end. What it is, what it is, and when you can say. Learn to just go with the flow. Life becomes a little easier. And you do what you need to do. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It just is what it is and at that moment. So I thank you for that. It's one of your many gifts that you have given me. But I kind of enjoy that one the most.
I was with a 20-year-old guy a few weeks ago who was very disappointed about something going on in his life, and he did not want to feel the disappointment. He didn't want the thing that happened to have happened. He didn't want to acknowledge that he could have been part of that. He wanted to blame, and I asked him what was the most dominant sensation he was having, and he said the disappointment. And I asked him to play as though he really is disappointed and not to try to override it, to not be something he is not, to not try to fix it, to not try to know any better, to not diminish his disappointment, but really get in there. And he went back to hit some tennis balls, and he, instead of doing disappointment, he started with anger, and he said he was angry at being disappointed. And I said, let's go back to the disappointment, and he started to slow down and feel disappointed, and he saw that he was much more relaxed. He was not as angry. He was in a way stronger than sad. And he started to see that his racket just hit the tennis ball, that he didn't really have to work hard to hit the tennis ball, that if he let go of some of his anxiety about, for him it was being in control. The opposite of disappointment was controlling things. So his grip was looser, his racket flowed through the air more easily. He's very tall, and he got to lower shots with more comfort. And he was just really surprised. And he, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're pointing out about feeling what any particular feeling feels like and experiencing that, and by kind of peeling away the layers of that, look what happened. Look how he now views disappointment and how it metastasized in his body. Well, there was an ease there.
Yes. And people who want to fix, my instinct is to let's first explore what you think you're trying to fix. I'm working with someone who wants to meditate better, which is sort of oxymoronic. I want to meditate better. I want to meditate longer and deeper and harder. And instead of appreciating that the meditation may only last 40 seconds today. But the rules are I'm supposed to meditate for an hour. That's what they said. And I'm going, well, what if we could just really, really explore meditation for 15 or 20 seconds? Would that be okay? And it sometimes takes a few weeks for that to be okay.
Yeah. Well, where does 45 minutes go with you, Zach? It's been so fabulous and delightful. But I do want to give out a contact number for people to get their own Practicing Life Through Tennis. So how can people contact you?
Email is the easiest. And do you know it, or do you want me to say it?
Let it flow.
Let it flow. Z is in Zach, Metaphorman, Metaphorman, at Juno, JUNO.com.
Beautiful.
That's probably the easiest way to get to me.
All right. And people can get to me if for some reason they can't contact Zach. You can contact me at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. That's vibe, V-I. Z as in Victor, IBE, Good Vibe Experience. Zach, thank you so very much. Thanks for the laugh. I loved it.
We needed it.
We did. We certainly did. So, please, what's that?
We'll continue this
on the court.
All right. Thank you.
I love it. Thank you. Bye. And please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey. Someone else's shoes, as my mystery guest next week will be. This is Lauren Leibowitz. And thank you for joining me and my guest, Zach Kleiman, and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. Bye-bye. Zach?